here for hour number two of the Lombardi Line on a Tuesday. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds with you, filling in for Patrick Maher and Michael Lombardi here on the Lombardi Line from the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa. And, of course, the Super Bowl conversation continues, Wes, but I do want to get back to William Hill. He was in the last segment of our first hour and just missed his full explanation there about baseball. We were talking football with Will Hill, some of his ideas on prop bets and whatnot, but then he, no pun intended, threw a curveball at us and wanted to mention his bet on the New York Yankees to win the American League East. And that was kind of interesting. We really haven't talked about many baseball bets just yet. There have been certainly some moves going on in the hot stove league, most notably by the San Diego Padres, who look to be going all in for the coming season. We hope that opening day will go off without a hitch. It is scheduled currently for April the 3rd, and that'll be just a few days ahead of the Masters, which of course you and I will be heavily invested in. But Will Hill going to bat with the Yankees at minus 175 to win the AL East, and he said, you know, he called it on the Tampa Bay Rays to win the division last year.
Yeah, and Yankees did just acquire Jameson Taillon from the Pittsburgh Pirates, so getting another starter in that rotation. Also did sign Julius Chacin as a free agent, probably in middle relief, but I mean, the whole thing is who is going to get Trevor Bauer, as Will mentioned, and if the Yankees are going to be able to make a play for him. They usually are going to add some kind of starter, and that's Taillon from the Pittsburgh Pirates so far.
And you think Bauer's on the move for sure?
Yeah, I got to think so. I mean, and part of me is as a jaded Cincinnati Reds fan that enjoyed his great season in Cincinnati knows that maybe Cincinnati kind of went for it that year, and now they're going to try to shed payroll again. So probably Bauer's going to be out of their price range.
A lot of people like the Cincinnati Reds heading into the season last year, and I myself included, and they really didn't play too poorly, but I'd like to see them, you know, go for it again. And of course Bauer was outstanding, but
they just couldn't hit in the playoffs against the Braves, and that proved to be their undoing. The hitting used to be the strength for that team, and now it became the pitching, and then they just couldn't hit and get clutch hits when they needed to.
For a few years in a row, they've been a really good team to bet on because of their good pitching. Let's get back to the football, my friend, and some more prop bets have come out. We spoke about the MVP award. You and I spoke about that early, and also with Will Hill. Obviously, a quarterback-driven prop bet there is the MVP of the Super Bowl, but now we have a couple of prop bets out as far as some individual accomplishments, passing yards by Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes, and we're both over 300 here. Brady at 300.5 yards, Patrick Mahomes at 329.5, and if I recall, on the championship game on Sunday, Patrick Mahomes went well over his total. I think he had near 350 as far as passing yards against the Buffalo Bills. Tom Brady, I think, went well under his passing prop total against the Green Bay Packers, but both of them over 300 here. Any opinion early on this one?
Well, both of these guys did go over in the regular season meeting. We talked about that Kansas City, even with that big lead that they had in Tampa in that November 29th meeting, did not really run the ball very much. Only 20 times, I believe, for 87 yards. 50 passes, 49 by Mahomes, and then they tried a trick play with Travis Kelce with an attempt. Mahomes had 462, I believe, in the first meeting, and Brady had 345. Now, that's not saying, okay, go automatically bet the overs, but just for some context. And Brady's numbers also did get inflated because they were behind. They were 17-0, like, right out of the chute. Like, it seemed like you were blinking. It seemed like the game just came on the air, and they were down 17-0, and it was 27-10 going in the fourth quarter. So, obviously, Brady had to throw them up and ended up with 345 yards. So, you know, you got to think it at least early, and I thought Will Hill made a good point, and that's why I always like to bet most years. You don't win it every year, but most years you will win it, that under no score in the first 6 minutes and 30 seconds, because usually going to get a three-minute drive at least on the first drive, and then if they punt or they get to midfield and then they punt, so then field position changes. So 2-3 minute drives basically, and you're pretty much there. So I usually think that there are some jitters early on, you know. That's why a lot of people like to bet first pass being incomplete, because it's like, okay, you feel like you don't have enough time, and you just throw it, and you maybe throw it a little higher or get it out a little bit too quick. So those are the type of props you got to look at, just in kind of the game flow and the dynamics of the game. So I haven't played either of these two. I know Mahomes clearly went over. Now I'm interested to see how much they're going to run with him, because with these line concerns, is that going to be more of a concern running the football, or is that going to be more of a concern in pass protection? So, you know, that's kind of what you have to evaluate and kind of dig through the numbers and see how these game flows have been. Because like I mentioned in the opening hour of this program, you look at the offensive line starters for Kansas City, 2 seventh-round picks, one guy that was an undrafted free agent, was Newski, the most experienced guy, was cut by Pittsburgh in November, and now the left tackle Remmers, who's going to be in for Fisher, assuming Schwartz doesn't come back, no snaps at left tackle since 2016.
Now, I'm with you on the first pass to be incomplete. That's one I've bet for a while. You're always getting plus money on that one, and then no score in the first 6.5 minutes. I don't know how often I've hit it versus I haven't, but it seems at least 50% of the time. Just have to grade that with what the, and those are both a couple of prop bets that you can go back and just look at history. You can go back and look at the last 10 Super Bowls and see how often it's come through and kind of judge that against the price that they're giving you. What about, you know, you talked about no score in the first 6.5 minutes or Brady going way over the passing total because he was forced into that situation. They were behind out of the gate so quickly. How about Bruce Arians running the ball on first down time and time
again? He did do that a lot in the NFC title game, and we kind of know Bruce Arians. And look, he was the offensive coordinator in Indianapolis and Andrew Luck's rookie year when he kind of took over as interim coach when Chuck Pagano was getting treatments for leukemia. And Bruce Arians, I think, does have the reputation of kind of the grip it and rip it type of guy. You know, throw it down the field. I mean, we saw what he did at the end of the first half. He will take some chances. What do they say? Risk it for the biscuit, yeah. as they call it. But he did run a lot on first down, and that was a little baffling to me that they were really trying to establish that run game. I mean, he was running on first down more than Arthur Smith was doing it for Tennessee in the wild card game against Baltimore. But, I mean, they have Derrick Henry, so if you're going to do it, you got to do it with a guy like him that's an absolute bull. But, yeah, I was a little bit surprised to see that. So I got to think maybe you'll see a little zigzag here that he's going to want to try to pass on first down. I know that Tom, look, and we'll get to it in a minute, he had some issues with turnovers, especially in the second half. I mean, Tom Brady did throw some bad balls, and maybe that's what Arians was seeing and why he tried to stick with that running game. Because if you recall, he almost had another interception in the first half. You remember that long pass to Godwin, where Godwin made a really great catch? It was basically what they call an arm punt, where it's like, okay, throw it up. It's going to get picked. We're basically going to change field position. It saves us from sending the punter out there, I guess. But Godwin made a great play on the ball between two guys. So that's what you worry about with Brady. That I mean, for a guy that's known through his entire career as a guy that just doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't make the mistakes. And he made a few and got away with them on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought you were referring to the one before he threw the home run at the end of the first half to Scotty Miller. He almost threw an interception.
Yeah, another one.
Too.
So, yeah, he got away with a couple. I mean, 3 interceptions in the second half, but he certainly got away with a couple going forward. So we'll see if Kansas City will make you pay, because the one thing about Kansas City's defense is – I believe they gave up the least amount of yards to wide receivers in the NFL season. On the other side of that, they gave up the most yards to running backs.
Okay.
And I think they were like top three in terms of giving up yards to tight ends. So it's like, you know what they want to do. They don't want to get beat deep. They want to funnel everything toward the middle of the field. And it's kind of a bend but don't break, I guess, type of approach where it's like, okay, we'll give you the middle and then we'll just stiffen, but we're not going to give bombs up down the field. And look, they succeeded in that on Sunday against Buffalo. Stephon Diggs and John Brown, the two speedster and the wide receivers for the Buffalo Bills, didn't really do very much. They went under their catches. They went under their receptions. And, you know, Diggs, I think, got most of his yardage late, kind of when Kansas City was sagging a little bit and just wanting Buffalo to run time.
Yeah, I thought Kansas City probably played its best game on defense that I saw all season against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. And you and I talked about that in our preview of the game. I felt Buffalo had the better defense coming in because we really hadn't seen Kansas City's defense step up in the last 8 weeks, it seems, you know, in quite a while. November 1st was the last game they covered the spread, and maybe that was around the last time we saw their defense really stiffen. But boy, they put together a heck of an effort in that championship game. And I think if they repeat that, they'll win the Super Bowl as well. We will see if that comes about. You mentioned the turnovers for Tom Brady. Three interceptions all in the second half against the Green Bay Packers. And I would imagine recency bias, people are going to jump on this proposition bet. You've got Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. How many interceptions will they have? It's under or over a half. Over is minus 160. So if he throws one pick, obviously that cash is there. You've got to lay a little juice. Minus 160 over a half an interception for Tom Brady, under basically no interceptions, is at plus 130. The prices are a little lower on the over for Mahomes. Over is plus 145. And then the no interceptions for Mahomes at minus 175.
And we did mention, of course, we've mentioned a couple times on this program about the offensive line injuries on the Kansas City side. Also some issues on the Tampa Bay side, mainly in the secondary, mainly with the safeties. Antoine Winfield nursing a bad ankle right now. Still listed as questionable. Jordan Whitehead with the shoulder injury. So that middle of the field could be open. I mean, it's going to depend on who the replacements are, but you definitely want to watch those secondary injuries in the Tampa secondary as much as you watch the offensive line injuries for Kansas City. So that could certainly affect in terms of the interception prop. No doubt that Tom Brady, it's going to be juiced to the over with some of the bad balls that he threw in the second half, just basically up for grabs that Jaire Alexander was able to snag a couple of those. So I understand why that's juiced and you're having to pay a heavy tax at 160 at this point, and it may even go higher.
Our guest, Will Hill, of course, mentioned who's going to score the first touchdown of the Super Bowl, the proposition bet that is available year in and year out. And he talked about it. It's a fun one to bet, and you hope to cash a ticket right off the bat with the first touchdown. This is one I always like to bet,
yes,
too. And I remember I had a run there where I always kind of like to go to the under-the-radar tight end.
The tight ends, you know, or the running backs, yes.
And I hit it for a few years in a row, or maybe 3 out of 4 years or whatever. And then the biggest one I got was when I cashed on the first touchdown will be scored by Devin Hester, and he ran it back against your Colts, right?
When of course everybody was saying all week to Tony Dungy,
don't kick it to
Devin Hester, and Tony Dungy was like, you know what, I'm not afraid of him. And then of course, what do? They kick it to Devin Hester and he runs it back, but the Colts were able to run it back pretty much the rest of the game and got a world championship for my fair city of Indianapolis.
I did see a prop bet earlier today that has come out. Will the first kickoff be a touchback, or will it be returned for a touchdown? And it was 70-1 that it will be returned for a touchdown. Gosh, I mean, is that even a quarter of the price of what it should be? You know, I mean, that Devin Hester return for a touchdown is the first and only time I can remember in a Super Bowl that happened.
And you brought up something interesting, too, because something I like to play that I wish I'd had more success with is, will there be a special teams and defensive touchdown?
Yeah.
And I usually like to play the yes, because it's a plus price. I mean, a lot of bettors will do that, too, with the safety prop and whatnot, but I usually think there's more value in terms of a defensive or special teams touchdown. One of the things we're now seeing, though, not as many punt return touchdowns anymore, because now it's all about possession. You know who I think actually tweeted that I saw tweet that was our producer, Aaron Oster. It's like, why would you do anything now other than fair catch? Because was it Hardman that fumbled that for Kansas City on Sunday in the AFC title game? It's like, a lot of teams are teaching their guys just to make fair catches. So obviously that takes some value away from the yes, if you're betting that yes on defensive and special teams touchdown, because you just don't see as many punt return TDs anymore.
So the odds here at BetMGM for scoring the first touchdown, you've got Tyreek Hill at 6-1, Travis Kelce at plus 650, Mike Evans at 9-1. He was in that neighborhood, in the neighborhood of 8 or 9-1 to score the first touchdown in the NFC Championship. championship game, which of course he did. And then Will Hill mentions 25-1 on Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, 25-1 seems like a pretty good number on Mahomes.
It does, because look, he still looked like he was mobile, even though he was dealing with that turf toe on Sunday, and Buffalo really couldn't get to him. So look, Mahomes makes a lot of sense. And usually if I'm betting these, I don't want to go with the obvious guys like the Tyreek Hills and the Kelsey's. I want to go kind of in the middle of the board. If you're Tampa, like Ronald Jones, 16-1, who they use a little bit more in the passing game. I don't see him on there, but Cameron Braid certainly is more of a red zone target at this point than Rob Gronkowski is.
Sure.
Not that they'll never target him, but they use Gronk a lot more now in the underneath game, and you saw he had that big catch on that screen game after he'd been pretty quiet all game and was able to run and get some space. So Braid is really who Tampa Bay likes to use in the goal line situation.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And you mentioned it earlier, maybe leaning on Clyde Edwards-Helaire for some prop bets. Well, to score the first touchdown, he's at 12-1. I don't think that's a bad choice either.
No, not at all. And he came back last week, looked healthy after missing the first game with the injury.
All right, it's time to get back to golf. We're going to go overseas across the pond. It is the Dubai Championship coming up. We'll get Wes's take on the European Tour when we come back, right here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Indeed immediately delivers quality candidates from our resume database when you upgrade your job post. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds with you inside the Lombardi Line here on a Tuesday at the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa. Time to talk a little golf. Of course, Long Shots will return this evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, as we get you ready for the Farmers Insurance Open in beautiful La Jolla, California. But another great golf tournament going on overseas as well, the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. And this is fresh off of Tyrrell Hatton winning last week in Abu Dhabi. And he's your betting favorite this week, Wes, at plus 750. And I know your guy, Tommy Fleetwood, you were on Tommy in Abu Dhabi, and he had a good tournament as well. He is 11-1 this week. And then the lone American, maybe not the lone American, I believe there are a couple in the field, but
he's certainly the only one going over that's not a regular European Tour player.
There was another guy I saw, and I can't remember his name, a much lesser name guy, but Colin Morikawa, certainly the notable American in the field at 12-1. Matthew Fitzpatrick, 16-1. And Paul Casey, who you usually see tee it up at Torrey Pines, but he will be in Dubai to take part in this one, and he's at 22-1. Comes off of a pretty good showing in the other desert out here in La Quinta.
He does, and he is actually one of my selections this week. He was my lowest price guy at 20, and he was eighth last week at the American Express. Really struck the ball beautifully, and that was actually off a layoff because Paul Casey had not played since the Masters. But second in the field in strokes gained tee to green, just behind Siwoo Kim, fourth in approach. And speaking of tee to green, that was Tyrrell Hatton's approach to winning last week in Abu Dhabi. I believe he ended up gaining like 13.5 strokes on the field, strokes gained tee to green, and that was by far the best. Hatton, by the way, now has 4 worldwide wins in 15 months. That matches world number one Dustin Johnson. I know you and I were both on him at Bay Hill last year, and I had him for a Euro event a couple years ago at Turkey. So now he's the top 5, first time in his career, and you mentioned Fleetwood. He was in the mix. He was 2 back of the 54-hole leader, Rory McIlroy. Hatton was in between those two guys. Never got it going on Sunday. Finished T7. So a little bit low for me, and that's what drove me to Paul Casey. BC. A guy that is getting some support is the South African, Christian Bezuidenhout, mm-hmm. who was a loser in the playoff last year to Lucas Herbert, the Australian, and he ended up being second, Bezuidenhout. So he will go off around 20, 22 to 1. A couple guys are on that graphic. Obviously, I mentioned Casey. I'm going to go back to Andy Sullivan again, yeah. and I got him at 37 to 1. He is just outside that top 50 to try to get into the Masters. Official world golf ranking top 50. I think he's like 53rd. So a win here would easily, or a win anywhere, would easily get him into there. Played solid last week. Never was really a contender, but in Dubai, they ended the season, not on this course, but in Dubai, they ended with two back-to-back events, and he was second and 10th at the Earth Course at Jeremiah Golf Estates to end the 2020 campaign. Three top sixes or better in this event since 2015. He's been a little feast or famine, though, because he also has two missed cuts in that span, but Sullivan's really playing his best golf of his career, so I did like him. Matt Wallace, of course, is getting support. He was a runner-up here a couple years ago. I think he was the runner-up actually to Bryson DeChambeau when he came over here and won back in 2019. So he's gotten some support. I've seen Robert McIntyre, the Scotsman, get a lot of support. Those guys didn't make my card this week. But a very good field here in Dubai. And I ended up on Casey and Sullivan. Also went back for seconds with Keimer, who missed the cut last week in Abu Dhabi, but got in the tougher end of the draw. And that's one thing you want to look at some of these events, actually both events, on the side of the pond. Look and see who has the tougher draws in terms of the wind. Because the wind, obviously, in the PM is going to blow usually harder than it does in the AM. So
I believe the forecast is calling for relatively benign this week.
That would be good then, so there won't be a draw bias. Keimer, look, led the tour in strokes gained approach last season on the European side. Sharp iron play has been a real recipe for success. Hit the greens here. This is not as long of a course as Abu Dhabi, but it does have some dog legs and whatnot. So got some of these shorter guys, and then I'll have some longer price guys that I will give out on the Loan Shots program this evening.
Want to ask you real quick, we don't have much time here. Tyrrell Hatton, do you look at him for Augusta? With as hot as he's been, he's never had success at the Masters.
I mentioned that on our preview, that I thought Hatton could strike as a major winner this year, but the price is getting cut after this win. But like him maybe a little bit more for the U.S. Open or the PGA.
Yep, I can understand that. Next up, it's time to talk hockey with our man Andy McNeil. He'll join us here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gearing up for the big game here at VSiN, and of course keeping you up to date on every other sports betting opportunity on the board as well. This week we've updated our programming lineup. The Lombardi Line is now 2 hours every weekday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern, and excited to introduce The Nuts with Mike Palm and Amal Shah immediately following us at 2 p.m. Eastern every weekday. This weekend also our big game preview show with Brent Musburger to get you ready for all of the Super Bowl betting and prop action. You can always find our lineup at VSiN.com or in your daily VSiN subscriber email. Make sure to check out The Nuts weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds on the Lombardi Line, filling in for Patrick Maher and Michael Lombardi. It is now time to join our VSiN hockey expert, Andy McNeil. You can follow him on Twitter at Digital Gambler. He writes for Point Spread Weekly. He is also the author of the VSiN Hockey Betting Guide. Good morning to you, Andy. Thank you for coming on the program. And gosh, quite a menu of games for a Tuesday in the NHL. And we'll take a few to look at here, but I want to start with the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders. It's the first meeting between these two teams this season, and the New York Islanders are a road favorite. I'm seeing it priced anywhere from minus 125 to minus 135, again, on the road, with a total of 5.5, pretty heavily shaded to the under.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for the Washington Capitals. Obviously, they've got four important players, including their starting goaltender, Ilya Samsonov, and their captain, Alex Ovechkin. They're in COVID-19 protocol right now. They're not able to play. This is the third game they're missing, I believe. But yeah, I think the value has been kind of sucked out of this game, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know if you guys noticed, but earlier in the day, the Capitals were available anywhere from plus 120 to plus 125. And then it was announced that they were getting their big winger, Tom Wilson, back into the lineup tonight, or at least he's a game time decision. So I think the speculation that he will play has moved the price into a pretty appropriate range.
Andy, Penguins and Bruins tonight. Looks like the Penguins are certainly getting the early money, is now down to as low as plus 110. Four in a row for the Pens after losing the first two to Philly. Two of those wins via shootout and one via OT. Now they're getting the Bees, the Boston Bruins. And I want to ask you a little bit about the Bruins side, because I think there was some discussion that maybe at least early on that the defense could potentially regress now that Zdeno Chara is in Washington, Torrey Krug now in St. Louis, but the Bees defense has absolutely not regressed to start the season.
No, I wasn't somebody that subscribed to that narrative. I think that this is, you know, it's a pretty fragile defensive unit, because, you know, if a guy like Charlie McAvoy went down, it would be a big blow, because they don't have Torrey Krug anymore, or Zdeno Chara. But it looks like the young guys are stepping up. And I'm somebody who believes that forwards are a little bit more important, and the Bruins have some really good ones. They have three really strong lines, a pretty good fourth line. I think they're in, you know, they're in very nice shape, and they're still without their top star, David Pastrnak, who's, you know, inching closer to return. We probably won't see him in tonight's game, but we might see him on Thursday when they take on the Penguins again. So that's something to watch. Andre Kasa is a nice player that they added last year prior to the playoffs, or around the trade deadline, I believe. He's been hurt too. So, I mean, once this team is healthy, look out. Right now they're already dominating opponents. The Flyers, they're a bit shorthanded as well, but they handled them no problem. I expect them to, you know, have a pretty easy time with the Penguins tonight as far as controlling the play. But Pittsburgh is a very dangerous team. They've got a lot of talented players. They haven't had very good underlying numbers thus far this season, and that's why I'm probably looking at leaning towards the Bruins here, but I'm not seeing a price that I like. I would probably lay $1.25 on Boston tonight, but I'm not looking to lay $1.30. It's pretty close.
Andy, the Los Angeles Kings are in Minnesota to face the Wild, and I think this Kings team is pretty intriguing. I don't really have a great handle on them through six games. They're 2-2-2, but I think they're going to be a team you can find some spots with, and we saw that earlier, about a week ago, when they upset the Colorado Avalanche as home underdogs. I'll tell you what, though, Minnesota, conversely, is a team that's gotten my attention. They're really off to a good start. They're laying a pretty big price here tonight, 160 with a total of 5.5.
Yeah, the Kings have got some surprising wins. They also took one away from the St. Louis Blues the other night. I think it was 5-3. You could have took a big price, I think around plus 180 on the Kings in that game with the backup goaltender in there for St. Louis. And it's a similar situation here in Minnesota. They've got their backup in, who didn't have a good first outing here. The Cal Peterson is a young goaltender that the Kings have. Jonathan Quick is somebody that everybody knows, but not a lot of people know about Cal Peterson, and he seems to be trending in the right direction. At least he was strong for them last season down the stretch before the season was paused due to the pandemic, and he's looked good thus far. So I like, you know, it would be Kings or nothing here for me in this game, but I think the price is pretty close. It's a little bit boring, but today, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at a 14-game slate, and I like to think I'm patience personified, because I haven't made a play myself yet. I'm just waiting for things to reveal themselves. I think a lot of things are pretty appropriately priced as far as sides go, for sure.
And nothing wrong with being patient. There's always, like some a wise man told me, there's always games tomorrow, kid, to bet on. One I wanted to get your opinion on, though, was Toronto and Calgary as part of that all-Canadian division, the North Division, here in the NHL this year. Looks like Campbell has been ruled out, who's been kind of the better goaltender, at least early on in the season, over Anderson. They did get Austin Matthews back, so the Leafs off to a good start, 5-2. Calgary's only played four games. But seeing some split action here, Calgary, a very small underdog at home.
Yeah, I was on the Maple Leafs in their last two games, actually. I thought Freddie Anderson was very good in their win over the Oilers, the 4-2 win. I thought he kept the Leafs in it late in that game. Jack Campbell has been really good at it as well. The Flames played pretty good in the last game. I was sweating that one, despite having a 3-1 lead at one point. You know, they really poured it on at the end. I had to turn the game off. In fact, I couldn't watch anymore. It's really hard to bet on the Maple Leafs sometimes. And here, like you said, I think there's a bit of split action. I got a good price. I laid -110. It closed around -120, -125 in the last game. I might be exaggerating that a little bit, but you know, we've seen it come back on Calgary this game. So it's not so much that I don't like anything today. It's that I think there could be a better entry point into the market in a lot of these games later on in the day. So I'm just waiting it out. But yeah, no, I definitely lean Maple Leafs here.
All right. Well, very good, my friend. And, you know, maybe there's nothing to bet on, but 14 games, it'll certainly be fun to watch. Thank you very much, Andy. We appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
For sure. Thanks. I'll talk to you guys later this week.
All right. That is Andy McNeil. We wrap up the program next with our friend Josh Applebaum right here on the Lombardi Line. Risk-free bet up to $500 at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Simply sign up and use the bonus code VSIN500 to take advantage of this offer. Download the app today. Use the bonus code VSIN500 to get back up to $500 on your first wager. Bet with confidence at BetMGM. It's a new customer offer paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, or West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 800-889-9789 in Tennessee, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. The promotional offer is not available in Nevada. This is the Lombardi Line. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds with you, and a regular contributor here to the program, Mr. Josh Applebaum, joins us. He is a market reporter for VSiN. You can find his Markets Insights podcast at vsin.com/podcast. Also, follow him on Twitter at Josh_insights. Good morning to you, Mr. Applebaum. Let's start in the NBA. Wes and I have been going over football. We talked with Andy McNeil about some hockey bets. We ran over the college basketball card. It's time to get to the association, and I guess you're taking a look at the Wizards game this evening.
Yeah, Brady, Wes, great to be with you here on a Tuesday. You guys have done a great job today. And just one, you know, thing, couple things. So number one, obviously today to me, it's a college basketball day and an NHL day. If you like betting college hoops and NHL, you have a big, big slate of tons of games to choose from. The NBA is getting kind of overlooked a bit. There's only three games on the board today. And we know the Clippers-Hawks game, that was a big line move. You know, the books were waiting because you saw Kawhi and Paul George both out with COVID protocols. That line was like 3.5. It's now up to 5. But we don't know if Trae Young's going to play. So there's a lot of uncertainty with that game. You'll get the Knicks and the Jazz. Jazz are a pretty big favorite, around -11. They're up to 11.5. That game did fall a little bit to the total, 212.5 to 211.5. But guys, one game I'm looking at Wizards and Rockets here. What's interesting so far this year in the NBA is that the first month of the season, we really saw a lot of unders do very well. Unders were cashing around 57%. But over the last month, really in January, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen overs do very, very well. And one game in particular today with some over action is this Wizards-Rockets game, because this one opened around 230, 230 and a half, got all the way up to 232 and a half, as we're showing here. There's a little buyback right now. It's around 231 and a half, 232. But guys, there's a lot to like with this over if you want to sweat this over. Number one, you look at the Wizards. They're one of the best over teams in the NBA, 8-4 to the over this year, 6-2 their last eight to the over. And then also just kind of the pace these teams play at. You see some, you know, not great defense, a lot of scoring, a lot of up and down pace stats would favor this over. And also a couple refs tonight, Smith and Capers, both big over refs. So usually these high totals, it's a little wary, you know, laying these overs here. You know, you're going to need like 60 points every quarter to cash, but a lot of money coming in on that Wizards Rockets over tonight.
Josh, we're waiting on the news, obviously, for Trajan. If he doesn't go, this is probably going to move downwards in terms of the total. But one of the things I kind of observe, and I'm curious your take on it in terms of your experiences, when you get stars that are missing games, obviously bettors are going to look to try to get a number to the under. But oftentimes you will see these games go over. And you look, you don't have George and Kawhi, so you take away the offense, but you also take away two of the better wing defenders in the NBA, so you're really not seeing a big move on this total. It's still pretty much 221 and a half by and large across the board for the Clippers and the Hawks tonight.
Yeah, it's a great point, Wes. You know, you do have this kind of 221 and a half. I'm seeing some shops that are just a little to the over here. A couple shops are 221 and a half minus 115. So again, you know, these late moves to me in the NBA are very, very meaningful. And the other thing is, you know, this Clippers Hawks game, we didn't really know the books were kind of smart. They knew about Kawhi and Paul George and didn't put out a number early. They waited to get that confirmation. But now it's like, okay, you know, I think a lot of recreational bettors would say no Kawhi, no George, you know, load up on the Hawks here. However, you know, now you have question marks about Trae Young. And really, Wes, in my opinion, and I wonder if you and Brady agree, a lot of times recreational bettors will really overvalue, you know, key players being out. Yes, they have an impact on the line. Yes, you know, obviously you're going to have a different opinion on the game, whether or not these two-star players will play. But unless you get a good number early, oftentimes, you know, you're going to see so much public bias against these injuries that sometimes actually buying low, going the other way, may have some value. So, you know, you could walk a tightrope here. If you think Trae Young's going to be out, you can grab Clippers plus five. You see that fall to, you know, four-ish around there. That's something to keep an eye out for. But the other thing here, Brady and Wes, don't touch the game. So many uncertainties. You don't know who's playing. Sometimes that's your best bet in these unknown situations.
And when you do get these starters out, I mean, nothing's ever 100%, of course, in this game. Not exactly a zero-sum game, but I often find in the NBA, it's easier to replace offense in short term than it is to replace defense, because there's a lot of guys that can score in the NBA. I mean, so you're able to usually to replace that. So I'm probably going to heed that advice and not touch this. If I did, I would actually lean to the over despite the injury concerns.
Josh, let's take a look at college basketball. And I know you have a couple of games that interest you there as well. Wes and I were looking at the card earlier in the program, and we're now seeing some move back on Alabama. Originally, that line kind of crashed. Alabama taking on Kentucky and some injury concerns there for the Crimson Tide. But now pretty much back up to 7 across the board in favor of Alabama. Wes also talked about maybe buying Tennessee on the dip a little bit. Tennessee has lost a couple of big games in conference in a row, still laying 9.5 against Mississippi State. Were you interested in either one of these two?
Yeah, so a couple things caught my eye. The Alabama game, you guys are right. You know, it looks like Alabama's going to roll there. Obviously, you know, Kentucky and Duke, two big powerhouses that have kind of struggled this year. You did see a move toward Kentucky. You know, Alabama open, you know, minus 8.5-ish. Line got all the way down to 6.5. But I think Ken Pom, he's got this closer to an 8 or 9 point game. So at one point, you know, you can almost look like buying low on Alabama may have some value here if you can still find a 6.5. The other thing that interests me, guys, was the Tennessee game. Because Tennessee-Mississippi State, to me, this is actually a buy-low over opportunity on this game, because this total Tennessee-Mississippi State opened around 130-ish. You've seen a lot of money drop this total down to 127. I'm even seeing a 126.5 out there. So Ken Pom, I think he had a 129 in this game, and you're also kind of matching a system that I really like, especially, you know, asking yourself, hey, you know, this total's falling. It's fallen 3 points, you know, 3.5 points. if you want to bet the under 127, all the power to you. I hope you win, but you're getting the worst of the number at this point. So if you're buying low on these moves, I've had some success in college hoops, you know, buying low after a move drops a lot. And the other thing I like is there's this one system that I've talked a lot about on the Market Insights podcast this year. There's kind of an unknown magic number here in the betting undergrounds, 127 or less in college basketball. Betting the over, it's 52-19, 73% to the over this year. So I have my eyes on that Tennessee buy low over, buy the dip, and maybe we can get some points in that one if you want to sweat it.
Josh, one total that has moved, and it's somebody that I've been successful with betting overs lately, is Auburn, now seeing at 150, pretty much the market consensus, a couple variating numbers out there. But this opened 147, 148-ish overnight, now up to 150. And look, we all look at kind of the same numbers as people that handicap college basketball. We all look at the Ken Bombs and the Bardovics just to kind of get a gauge, and certainly the guys behind the counters also look at that number. But Auburn was a slower paced team earlier this year, some young guys for Bruce Pearl, maybe not as much depth, but ever since they've gotten Sharif Cooper, who has now played five games, the star freshman point guard for Bruce Pearl down on the Plains, they've been more of that up-tempo pressing type of team over the last five games. They scored 90 against Alabama, scored 95 against Georgia, only 66. Kentucky kind of slowed it down, then scored 73 against Arkansas, and then 109 on Saturday. Do you continue to ride this short-term overtrend with Auburn?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the market terms of the movement, Wes, it does look like a little respected money is hitting that over. You know, the total did open 148.5-ish. It's up to 150. So you have seen a move toward that over. To me, I'm looking to see if any buyback takes place because, you know, we talk about our guy Ken Pom. He has a 147 final score here. The other thing is, you know, you look at kind of just trend lines. You're right. Auburn has kind of changed their pace a bit, but they are 10-6 to the under this year. So on the one hand, you're getting a better number here if you want to buy low and take the under, but also you're kind of going against their recent style of play. So that's something to keep an eye out for. What I'm interested in, guys, is looking at Missouri because, you know, oftentimes you look at this spot here in our VSiN graph, Missouri's ranked 12th. They're on the road at Auburn. You know, 9 times out of 10, the public will say, I'm getting points with Missouri. Let me grab Missouri all day. Exactly. So this is an open -2.5. But the interesting thing, Wes, here is that it opened 2.5, and really in between, all the moves have been down to 2. So it's down to 2, back to 2.5, down to 2, 2.5. All liability seems to be on this Missouri side. So, you know, 99 out of 100 times, I would look at this board and say, you know, Auburn, unranked favorite at home. It looks fishy. Lay the points. But, you know, our guy Ken Pom, he has Missouri winning this game by 1 point. So I'm actually leaning a little bit Missouri grabbing the 2.5, and you'd love to grab the 2.5, see that fall to 2. But definitely a game late night here, 9 o'clock, should get a lot of action.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really good game to watch, and a point spread would indicate that it's going to be a close one. Let's move over to the ice, my friend. A huge card, and we couldn't get a play out of Andy McNeil. He's still dumbfounded. 14 games, and he's being patient right now, which is oftentimes a very good position to be in. If you don't like anything, you know, just hang on. Maybe something will develop. How about you? Are you seeing anything in the market there on the ice tonight, Josh?
Yeah, so Andy's awesome. Andy's the best, and I totally agree. If you don't see an edge, you know, wait it out, you know, see if maybe you get a better number later. Personally, me though, guys, I love the NHL board tonight. I'm seeing so much line movement, and I'm a system-driven better, so I look at situation spots and a couple that have really cashed very well this year. Number one, you look at the Nashville Predators. They're at home against Chicago. Chicago had some COVID issues. Nashville Preds, they're like -160 up to -170. A couple systems that have done very well this year. You look at favorites off a loss, 22-5, 81% this year. You'll get home favorites, 34-12, 74%. Here's the kicker, mold, you know, kind of putting them together. A favorite off a loss versus an opponent off a win, 17-3, 85% here. So I'd be looking at the Preds here in this spot. Another one that caught my eye was the Flyers at the Devils. That matches another one of these, favorite off a loss, opponent off a win. Keep an eye on Minnesota. So I love Andy, but I'm loving this board tonight, guys. I think it's an NHL night.
It's certainly a full board, that's for sure. I told Andy, I said, hey, you may not have a play, but you certainly got a lot of great games to watch. Josh, thank you as always. We'll talk to you again soon.
Wes Brady, thanks so much. Good luck today.
All right, that is Josh Applebaum, and that is going to do it for the Lombardi Line. Thank you, my friend. I will see you this evening for Long Shots. Next up right here on VSiN, it's day two of the nuts. Mike Palm and Amal Shah next here on the Sports Betting Network.